And good morning, Indie Media listeners. This is David Grace. It's, what is this, Wednesday the 19th of July. On the phone with us, we have an interview with Josh Wolf. And Josh, here in San Francisco, we've got a grand jury that's been, it's very similar to the old House on American Activities types of grand juries. Is that your perception there, Josh? You're being called as a witness and demanding you're an independent journalist and they're asking for you to disclose your information and sources, as I understand it.
Right, that's basically correct. I do see strong parallels between the House of Ed American Activities Commission or committee and what's going on in my case. However, there are also some differences. That's a House hearing, and this is a civil contempt hearing in regards to a federal grand jury.
Yeah, and now it's, I'm personally not very familiar with your specific case. It's my understanding that you were reporting on a demonstration, and they're trying to force you to give up your video footage?
Right, that's correct. For the past, 3 years now or so, I've been documenting protests in the Bay Area, mostly concentrating in San Francisco, and I happened to be out filming the July 8th, 2005 demonstration, which was held in the Mission District in solidarity against the G8, which I believe was in Glen Eagles, Scotland at that point. As many of your listeners are probably aware, the G8 just finished up this year in Russia. So protest in regards to the same thing that was just going on in Russia right now.
You know, it's funny you mentioned that. I happened to videotape just a short portion of the start of that demonstration. It was a rally at 16th Street BART, and very peaceful, calm, normal San Francisco rally. There were a lot of people standing there, placards, a good variety of ages and demographics. Obviously, the G8 is such an ugly organization that is trying to be new pretenders to the master race theme. And then, as a matter of fact, they don't even talk about in this new war in the Middle East. They're trying to get the G8's perceptions on where to take the world. So, as the demographics were showing in this, the demonstration that's of issue in this, I was standing on a concrete base of a street signal, and immediately behind me were two upper echelon SFPD officers. I videotaped the massive number of police cars, and I believe there were actually Homeland Security cars. There were a lot of very strange cars there that day. I think there was even a bomb squad truck. But they didn't apparently notice me, and they were talking about their plan of attack for this march. And I'm needless to say, I didn't have a Zoom microphone, but I do remember that they talked about they didn't want to attack the rally until it got out from underneath the out here in San Francisco, we have buses with electric cables, and they have these long arms that reach up into the sky and touch electric wires. And the police didn't want to attack the rally until it got out from underneath those electric wires. And so there was a desire to wait until it got over on Valencia Street, which doesn't have those electric wires, and for that to be the point of attack. So in this case, the rally, as I understand it, I only saw it leave. It marched down number of blocks down Mission Street and apparently took to the right and headed over toward the Castro and whatnot. And at that point, the police very much surrounded it and tried to split it up in a number of different directions and goaded the marchers until some violent incident occurred. And so in this case, you're being Well, and as I understand it, also a police officer was injured, and as I understand it, the police and this grand jury are now looking for some video footage of independent video activists and journalists. So, yeah, this is a kind of an ugly incident. But I've frankly never tried to audio enhance what footage I have to really see if I can draw out the conversation of this these two police officers, upper echelon officers. Very interesting. They were immediately behind me, probably less than 3 feet away.
Well, that's very interesting news that you have to say there, David, in regards to the way the police chose to handle the protest. It's actually news to me what you're describing, but I can speak to the fact that I did witness what seemed to me to possibly be politically motivated tactics for how they handled the protest, given the fact that I have covered protests for 3 years and have learned essentially what the standard operating procedure would be for the police and how they deviated from that.
All right. Well, now tell us about your journalism. Are you with Cable Access? Are you a stringer with Indie Media? What's your portfolio, so to speak?
Well, I did start off entering the field of video journalism. I've been a print journalist since I was in high school. Worked for high school newspaper, college newspaper, and the Santa Barbara Independent. Became involved in video journalism and did have a show on Cable Access. Since then, I've reported for Indie Bay, as well as my own personal website, which is The Revolution Will Be Televised at joshwolf.net. So that's kind of my rough history of my reporting. I believe that was what the question you asked was.
Yeah, that's fine. And actually, here in San Francisco, there are official police authorized press passes, but there are, with Cable Access, I don't know that they've ever issued any press passes to any Cable Access reporter. But that doesn't mean that Cable Access doesn't have some very legitimate reporters. I can think specifically Steve Zelter has been doing a program on Cable Access probably going on 30 years now, labor on the job. He's interviewed some of the top labor leaders in San Francisco. He's constantly at all sorts of rallies and forums, and is so well known that he really doesn't need a press pass. Is part of the issue of the grand jury that you aren't issued a San Francisco Police Department press pass, and ergo you're not a journalist?
Well, that's actually a fairly compounded question. Let me start off by saying that, to the best of my knowledge, the press credentialing, the official press credentialing, is actually done through the California Highway Patrol and not the SFPD. However, I could be wrong on that matter. San Francisco has a culture of realizing that the media is not limited to simply CBS, Fox, and all of those other corporate junctions, and we have a rich history of independent daily newspapers as well as independent journalists from all walks of life, including Cable Access. And for the most part, San Francisco is quite understanding of people, whether their credentials are from the publication that they work at or the police department. The fact that I am not credentialed under the California Highway Patrol has not been brought up in any way, shape, or form in the case, nor do I understand that there's any legal bearing for that to be a requirement to be acknowledged as a journalist. In fact, the court case is actually not broached whether or not I am, in fact, a journalist, although several newspapers of record, including the SF Weekly and SF Chronicle, have referred to me as such. And if there's no clear definition of a journalist and a paper of record refers to, if a journalist refers to someone as a journalist, as I see it, that is an indication that they are a journalist, as there really is no clear rubric to define what is and is not a journalist. However, despite the fact that, it's been taken on the fact that I am a journalist, the federal government does not have any protections for journalists and their sources. The California Shield Law protects journalists and their unpublished material, and there are similar statutes in at least 32 other states, and I've later been told that there's 49 states that have some form of journalist protection in addition to the District of Columbia. It is my belief that the federal government is attempting to get around these protections by taking this in federal court as opposed to a local proceeding where it should really be. It's been established that the federal government has no journalistic protections, and they've made an effort to demonstrate this through cases such as the Balco trial that's going on right now with the Chronicle reporters, Judith Miller, Robert Novak, just to name a few. It's actually quite an issue right now in the sphere of journalism.
Well, that's right. And, you know, as just as a side note, I'm a history major, and I consider myself as much a historian as a journalist. And as I was mentioning, say, for example, Steve Zeltzer, he's tried for years to get press credentials. And I think we may both be right about the Highway Patrol issues larger press credentials for the whole Bay Area, since it would be across, a journalist for the TV news would be in perhaps 5 or 7 different counties as well as different cities. So the Highway Patrol would logically be credentialing sort of like a background check to authorize the press credentials. But then San Francisco being an entity in itself of large proportions does offer or does issue press credentials. So it depends on what sort of venues you want to deal with. But I'm thinking also in terms of historian. As a history major and a historian, I really consider the footage that I take to be a part of the historical context. And that is a sense part of what journalism is all about, but it's also in a larger sense the more mundane, the feel of a boring crowd. For example, as I was describing the gathering, the rally at 16th and Mission here for the very demonstration that you were talking about, it was a rather boring crowd. It was not huge. It was probably less than a couple of hundred people by the time I stopped videotaping. And there were a massive number of police cars, not only on 16th Street and on Mission Street, but around the corner on some of the side streets. They were lined up, and very strange cars. This may have been one of the first demonstrations in which either Homeland Security cars, BART police cars, probably 4 or 5 different kinds of venues. The sheriff's department had big buses to apparently arrest people and prepare them for arrest. So there was a real feel for police were girding their loins for some excitement, yet the demonstration was rather boring. And as the standard TV journalism goes, they only look for action footage. A historian looks for the totality of the picture. And so when the demonstration is boring or quiet or calm or non-eventful, people just standing there with signs, having conversations, and on occasion a car would drive by and honk, that's the sign of a comfortable democracy. But when you look across the street and you see 75 police standing in marshaled form, and then around the corner they're beating their sticks into their hands and checking their holsters, you get a whole different sense for what's anticipated. So, yeah, that's just a side note on the journalism. Now let's talk about this grand jury. When you got your summons to that grand jury, what did they ask? Can you tell us, without getting into, what your responses were, what was it that they asked, why did they call your presence there?
Let's go ahead and backtrack a little bit, which is about 2 days after the protest. I was sitting in my living room talking on the phone to my mother when a doorbell rang. And I immediately answered it. And there was a gentleman with a Hawaiian shirt, as I recall, and some chino shorts. It's possible he was wearing something different. It's been a year. Carrying a collapsible portable filing cabinet holder thing. And my first thought was, oh, this is a reporter, and he asked to speak to me, and I'm like, okay, sure, we can discuss this. And then a few seconds later, he flashes his badge, and it's revealed that he's with the FBI. I immediately instinctively shut the door behind me, not realizing whether or not I have my keys, and all of a sudden, another agent comes out, as well as two SFPD investigators. So now there's four investigators for law enforcement, be it federal or local, all wanting to talk to me, and I just locked myself out of my house. So, of course, I didn't really have too many options at that point and ended up talking to them for a little while, at which point they requested a copy of the unedited material. I basically told them that I wouldn't be able to comply with that at this point in time. Immediately called the NOG and spoke to a lawyer who informed me that I did not legally have to turn over that footage at that point in time.
Yeah, just for a side note, the NLG is National Lawyers Guild, right?
Yes, the NLG is the National Lawyers Guild, and they provide legal assistance for people who are in situations such as this or other political-oriented situations. And honestly, I imagine they provide a lot more legal support, but most of it for me and the people I know has been involved with activism. But essentially, I called them, was put in touch with a lawyer, found out that I did not at this point legally need to give them the footage, and that seemed to be that for a while. I'd pretty much almost forgotten the case when the doorbell rang again in January. This time in January, it was the same FBI agents, and they were giving me a subpoena to appear in front of the federal grand jury. Now, what this subpoena stipulates that I provide is as follows. One, they want to talk to me. What they want to ask me, I have no idea. Two, they want a copy of the tape, the unedited footage that I shot on July 8th of 2005. And three, the other thing, which admittedly they've kind of downplayed, and I don't know whether it's central to the case or not, is they actually want the camera that I shot the material with, as well as the computer that I edited my footage with, which I don't know the procedure there, but if I were to have to provide that to them, would obviously result in me unable to continue working.
Well, and that gets into that all of your records would be, they want a computer, then they get access to any number of different files that you've got on there for any number of different purposes. That kind of a fishing expedition beyond belief.
Indeed.
Yeah, actually, it's kind of interesting because standard video footage that would be used in any kind of court case, the raw material, and is ideally the original tape, is the evidence. Any kind of tape which is a secondary tape is considered suspect because it could have been potentially edited. The idea that they would not only ask for the camera, but the but in addition, the editing equipment would mean that they were trying to, well, it almost creates the image that they're trying to fraud the evidence, because they would be tainting the mix by adding the computer, which would be doing editing, and that is something so in addition to the evidence that it almost looks suspicious that they would be asking for it.
Well, I'm going to be in the strange position of actually defending the U.S. attorney at this point, which is that it hasn't, the computer and the camera have not been at the forefront of the assistant U.S. attorney's demands, and it is altogether possible that the equipment that some camera was the equipment used for shooting something, as well as the computer to edit the material, may in fact be part of their standard written out orders for this sort of a case. It hasn't been brought up as a particular issue, and yes, I see your point, but at the same time, I have no real indication to think that.
Yeah, there's just one side note, too, and it's my understanding that many of the newer digital cameras have got a sort of I think they call it a digital watermark, and so that every camera has got this digital watermark, and if, for example, you've got a Sony camera, it will have this hidden watermark somewhere in the image, and that whether it's through magnification or through some serial number or maybe even sort of like a barcode that is unseen at normal screen size, but with the ability to draw it out so that you can identify the footage from the camera. It's sort of like the fingerprints of a camera. And this was, it's my understanding that the Abu Ghraib photographs, they were able to trace some of the execution of Nick Berg to some of the same cameras at Abu Ghraib. So this digital watermark is new technology, and it's perhaps been mandated since 9/11. And so it would depend on how new your camera was for whether or not it could be the video footage. If you just submitted your tape and you didn't submit the camera, that they would be able to tell if it was from the same camera, although they wouldn't be able to necessarily tell if it had been edited. But that's beside the point. So
I can't speak to whether or not there's a digital watermark on my camera. I honestly have no idea. I'm aware of that technology. It's obviously similar technology to that which is used in the case of a crime to identify the bullet and which gun it came from. It clearly seems like the same sort of idea behind that. I know a lot of what might be referred to as radical journalists have made parallels. You know, my camera is a weapon. It's interesting that then they followed through and created this digital watermark.
Well, in any case, let's get back to your original summons. So they're asking for your camera, your footage, and your computer. And did they give a description of what they were looking for specifically, or did they just call for your presence with those pieces of equipment?
Well, a grand jury proceeding is a very secretive proceeding. The actual things that go on inside the grand jury cannot be, well, they can be discussed by the person who's been called to testify, and he can certainly say what happened, but those transcripts cannot be released. That's, in fact, how the grand jury is called, the Balco reporters, if it's the Chronicle or the reporters regarding the Balco situation, because they somehow obtained leaked grand jury testimony. So the grand jury is, in a sense, a secret court, despite the Constitution's promises against such secretive things. Through various court proceedings and motions, my lawyer, through Siegel and Yee, has actually been able to open up a lot of the investigation, and we've also been able to ascertain what the subject of this federal investigation is. The subject of the federal investigation is the alleged vandalism of an SFPD police car. Now, you might be asking yourself, why is an SFPD police car a federal matter? Well, the federal government asserts that because San Francisco pays for the police cars out of its general fund, and because San Francisco's general fund gets some of its money from the federal government, therefore the federal government has an interest, a fiscal interest, in the possible alleged vandalism of this police car. But at the same time, that means that every university, every public high school, and probably the sidewalk you walk on, all have some sort of federal interest. So that clearly shows a move to kind of erode these state protections that journalists have fought so hard to maintain and have over the past, I don't know, 100 years maybe?
Well, further than that, it's that's very interesting. States' rights people, of course, Bush was elected on the principle of states' rights, and if you know much about Yeah, states' rights. The American Civil War was based upon states' rights, that the various southern states were saying that they had the right to allow slavery in their state, and that the idea of federal civil rights statutes could not be mandated by the federal government, that it was a state's right to have slavery if it chose to. And so the Bush administration was elected by these neocons claiming that they have the state's right to pollute in their area. They have the state's right to have less than a federal minimum wage, have labor standards in one state that are different than another. And so the idea that the federal government would be coming in demanding to see records and management of properties that it oversees is very much a camel's nose under the tent. And there's an addition, you know, we hear that Homeland Security appoints a representative for Northern California, for Southern California, for each of many different counties throughout the nation. And we think of these people as typical cronies of Bush and whatnot, who are going to be essentially somebody to be sneered at. But in the case of a crisis, these people hypothetically can supersede our elected sheriffs. They can supersede our local governments. They can become kings overnight of vast regions of every part of America solely by the state of Homeland Security. And so if in the name of monitoring police cars, which get a tiny scrap of Homeland Security budget, that they're doing this camel's nose under the tent of Homeland Security, sounds like we might want to inform the state's writers of what's going on. We maybe break apart that neocon alliance a little bit more.
Right. I'm aware of what you're talking about. In fact, it's been written about well before 9/11. Bill Cooper actually cites a lot of that stuff in his book, Behold the Pale Horse. I'm not going to speak to whether or not I feel that that's a likely scenario or whether that's related to my case in any way, simply because it's outside of my knowledge base.
Okay. Well, in any case, it is definitely a fear that in the case of, you know, just 2 days ago, Fox News was screaming about World War III. I see today that they're not even calling this a war. They're calling this the crisis in the Middle East. So apparently they're either toning it down for one reason or puffing it up for another. And but
World War III just didn't get the right ratings. We were too afraid to turn on the TV, so they had to augment the messaging.
Could be, but in any case, you know, in the declaration of a war, that would certainly give Bush more power, and then all of a sudden these cronies would be elevated to superseding all local governmental authority. So that's an ugly scenario for this grand jury. Although many people don't realize it, but the average citizens can convene their own grand juries. And that's something that hasn't been done. You know, we can certainly convene our own grand juries to oversee the management of Homeland Security. We can convene our own grand juries to oversee the management of the military budget or the Halliburton funding and the management of the war. We can convene grand juries for Downing Street or 9/11, and these are legitimate grand juries that would sit in the federal buildings or anywhere else that the people decide that they're going to do it. And frankly, it's probably better that we do that sooner than later. But in any case,
yeah, I don't know anything about these civic led or civic inspired grand juries that you refer to, but I do think that it is important for citizens and non-citizens alike to exercise their involvement in public policy, whether it be forming this citizens-based grand jury to investigate various things, or covering their own news. Basically, we cannot rely on the people that are part of the system, whether it be the corporate media system or the government itself to investigate these matters. It's up to us to take the own our own initiative.
Well, right, and basically the purpose of the grand juries were to recognize that there are periods of time when corruption gets so complete that it may encompass the three forms of government, the legislative, the judicial, and the executive. And so the people have to have the ability to oversee how their money is being spent. So in other words, the basic principle of America was the social contract, that if you are being asked to, or you are being forced to pay taxes, then it is incumbent that you, or we the people, let's say, have the ability to have representatives to monitor how our taxes are being spent. And so the grand jury's principle is that if our taxes are being abused, then we, the taxpayers, have the right to know how our taxes are being spent. And if crimes are committed using our tax money, if fraud is being used toward our tax dollars, that we have the right through taxation with representation to convene a grand jury to determine how these taxes are being spent and the management of our property. So that's really the basis of it, and it can be, you know, that covers right, left, and center in American government, and you can gather an enormous alliance based upon taxation with representation, because it's well recognized, you know, post Katrina, that Brownie and these people are utter cronies, and that they are abusing the system in enormous ways. I think the loyal patriotic families that sent their 18-year-old kids over to Iraq and Afghanistan and are now realizing that there are no protective measures, that their kids are being forced to use hazardous and cheap and ineffective weapons, and that they're being forced into bad, dangerous situations through fraudulent foreign policy and lies. You know, this is, it really boils down to taxation without representation. And so all of these issues really stem from that. You know, it's bait and switch, it's fraud, which usually transmits down to the wasting or misuse of tax dollars. So
yeah, these are all very good points. I think that an open and transparent government is absolutely essential to any sort of democracy or republic as we have. It's interesting that you bring up the taxation without representation. That's actually the slogan that's on DC license plates. I saw this the other day, and I was just kind of like surprised that in the city of DC, the District of Columbia, your license plate frame, like in California, probably says the Golden State. In DC, it says taxation without representation. And that really does drive home the issue in that regard.
They do not have the right to vote or they don't have statehood, and so they don't have a local government. They are dependent upon the 50 states to derive their budget, and that's long been an ugly issue. As a matter of fact, an interview that I'd like to do here shortly, the D.C. Statehood Party is associated with the Green Party in Washington, D.C., and their local candidate filed for office on the 5th of June, and by the 8th of June, he was shot dead 7 times. So there was an assassination, apparently, of a candidate for mayor of Washington, D.C., and very little public attention has happened with that. So I just learned about it yesterday and been trying to make arrangements to do an interview about that.
Yeah, that sounds like a frightening situation, but probably doesn't have a whole lot to do with the issues facing me right now.
Yeah, right.
But you did earlier mention that when you have an executive, a legislative, and a judicial branch that are aligned, that was kind of what prompted you to say how all these things become so much more important. Well, there is a fourth branch of government, which is the unofficial branch, being the free press. When you have three branches in line, the press has the ability to publicize these issues. It is a sort of de facto fourth branch of government, the fourth estate. And to that end, this case seems to be part of an assault on the fourth estate by the government. I can't speak to whether each of these situations where the government has exercised that there are no protections directly is for that means, but if they start trying to erode journalistic protections, then that should be a very scary thing in conjunction with the fact that we do have three branches that are closely aligned at this point in time.
Well, right, and frankly, the fourth estate, as you're describing it, is the method in which the people are informed about how their taxes are being spent. There aren't enough town halls for all of the farmers, for all of the people that are on split shifts and variety of different people throughout the world that or the country who are in schedules or work arrangements or handicapped or infirm but still with clear mind. And the idea that a newspaper can help disclose how your taxes are being either spent wisely or fraudulently. And so the idea of crushing the information to the people about how their taxes are being spent is certainly prominent, and frankly prominent back to our own Ben Franklin.
Indeed.
So, again, without disclosing what your testimony was or wasn't in the grand jury, what can you tell us about what you were faced with your summons, and then with the actual participation in the I take it it's a courtroom scene. Was it pretty much just a Fifth Amendment plea that you laid out, or is there a phrase that you used, or is that touching in something that you can't even talk about?
No, I can certainly go into the details in regards to that. I have no restrictions on what I said in the grand jury, only that the actual transcript and possibly the questions that I was asked, I can't go into. I'm not 100% sure on the legality of that side of things, but I know for a fact that I can certainly state where my stance is and what I invoked, which is that, yes, the Fifth Amendment is one small portion of my defense, my right to not have to self-incriminate myself, but much more central to the case is a number of things. For one, as a journalist, my unpublished materials should be protected. They're protected under the state of California. They should be protected under the federal government, and this case shouldn't even be in the federal government. But when I appeared in front of the grand jury, what I did was I invoked my constitutional protections afforded to me by my First, Fourth, Fifth, Sixth, and Fourteenth Amendments.
Okay, and let's see, the cross-section of different things, freedom of speech, of course, is part of the First, but it's also freedom of assembly, 14th.
Freedom of the press.
Yeah, freedom of the press.
To redress the government for grievances.
Sure, and then getting into the 14th, the unenumerated, I'm trying to think of what the 6th is right offhand.
The 6th is the right to fair and adequate counsel.
Oh, sure, yeah, and in a grand jury, you're not entitled to counsel, and that's a rather, that's always been a strange position to be in.
Well, I'm not entitled to counsel in the entire case, although it's been going on for a year. The actual times when I have to go before the government has been a very, very squished time frame. So that there isn't adequate time for me to meet with my lawyer, who's a very busy lawyer and, you know, isn't just working on my case, in order to have fair and adequate representation. In order to have fair and adequate representation, we need ample time to prepare the appropriate motions and adequate time for me to discuss my case and assess all possible options available to me.
Well, right. Now, you know, it actually crosses my mind that if Homeland Security or whoever is inducing the grand jury to move this case forward is ostensibly out there to protect the police cars and the assets that that they're partially funding, that this may also involve the civil lawsuit. I would take it that the police officer who got injured, and I've only heard this in kind of a periphery. I think he fell and hit himself against something. I'm not exactly sure what happened.
I'm not going to speak to the injury of a police officer.
Well, it's not necessary. It's not necessary that you do. I'm just thinking that if he has a civil lawsuit, and as I mentioned in the beginning, I heard the police officers discussing how they were going to attack the time and place, so to speak, of attacking the demonstrators. If I remember right, part of my video footage has the radio 9/11, or it's not 9/11, but the radio broadcast. It mentions, I think one of the cops calls in and says, don't do anything until they get out from underneath those electric wires. That would be on part of the tapes. And so the police officer who ended up injured, if he's got a lawsuit based upon his injuries, he has a lawsuit against the commanders because they were not only using some form of negligence, but they were abusing their authority in causing this quiet demonstration to be attacked. I'd be interested in finding out if there were a bunch of different channels, since there were sheriffs, there were police department, there were BART, and there were Homeland Security, how many of those different dispatch tapes discuss this, the time and place of the attack of the demonstration.
I don't really know much about that. In fact, the only real witness, or the only real thing that I witnessed in regards to police jurisdictions other than the standard SFPD, I'm not saying they weren't there, I'm sure they were, I just happen to have not seen them, was immediately around this time, and you can watch it on my video, a white unmarked police car comes up, and a guy comes out and says, "Leave or I'll blow your fucking head off." Or wait, no, I'm sorry. He says, "Leave or I'll blow your head off. I'm a Fed motherfucker." That's a little frightening for our federal government to be asserting that.
Well, and he was saying this to reporters? He was saying it to who?
He was saying it to a giant crowd of people, some of which may have been at the demonstration, and others which happened to just be walking down Valencia Street.
There must be a lot of video footage of that, and audio copies, right?
Well, it's on my tape. You can watch it. It's towards the very end. I can't speak to what other people may or may not have of media from the event.
You know, I don't know if I should ask you this or not. I take it then your footage is online? And so it's kind of beside the point for the media, for the grand jury to demand your footage? Or have you got an edited portion online?
The video itself was edited the night of the protest and posted about 2 a.m., an edited form of the protest. As I have stated in a declaration, which is filed in federal court, I do not have any footage, nor did I witness any sort of attempted arson of a police vehicle. However, at the same time, my unreleased material is analogous to a reporter's notes and should be protected.
Yeah, I think that that's always been the state of the art, so to speak, the unused footage. It's always been at the discretion. Some of the standard press out here in San Francisco, I think KRON, used to, as a courtesy, sometimes give up their footage, but it wasn't as a norm. It was only as a courtesy because apparently one of their management was cozy with the police department. But that's never been a mandate, and I think you're right. The unused footage has always, well, it's probably also a given, sort of like the market forces, since the press, especially the standard press, only show the exciting footage. The unused is not exciting, and ergo, nobody would want to use that anyway. So it's kind of a given that. Although it kind of, I'm not sure if you're familiar with the old story, Alexandre Dumas's book, The Count of Monte Cristo. Nowadays, people are being locked up in Guantanamo for what they know that they aren't aware of. And people apparently are being locked away for things that they, the commonplace things that they don't quite realize. Hey, I've got somebody knocking at the door. If you want to, why don't you give some description of how to get in touch with your case? You've got something coming up tomorrow, and talk for about a minute, and I'll answer
situation.
The door.
Sure thing. So if you're still listening, once again, my name is Josh Wolf, and I'm in charge of civil contempt in regards to a federal grand jury investigation. I'm an independent journalist, and my hearing for this civil contempt is tomorrow at 1 p.m. at the Federal Building in San Francisco. We're going to be having a press conference at noon, and we fought really hard to make this an open hearing. Normally, these sorts of things are closed hearings. Hopefully, this will be an open hearing. And we would love for all of you to come out both at the noon o'clock press conference to show your support, as well as come to the hearing itself. I'll be continually updating everyone on my website at joshwolf.net/grand jury. Once again, that's joshwolf.net/grand jury about the case. In the event that I do end up no longer able to update my website for obvious reasons, then you may need to go to joshwolf.net for the updates. My mom's going to take care of updating my blog, should I be unable to access a computer regularly.
Faithful mom.
Basically the situation.
Yeah, that's great. Thanks, Josh. And so it's good to have a faithful mom in case a son ends up in prison. But I think we're going to be able to help stem the tide of that. There are any number of different strange anomalies about that demonstration. I've heard rumors that the police were induced to attack it, and the way that they split that demonstration up, it would seem to me that there would be police interaction that would be leading to some culpability of the police department, and it was rather a quiet and uneventful, unassuming crowd. And not a large one at that, and they were goaded at best into any incident that occurred. Do you have anything to sum up with, or otherwise we'll see you at the press is going to only be allowed up to the front door of the courthouse, I expect, tomorrow, so you will have to enter on your own and face any future post your entry into there tomorrow, right?
Well, actually, that's a little bit inaccurate, or could be. The press can certainly go into the federal building, although they may or may not be able to take cameras in. But we've made a motion for the public to be able to attend the hearing, and that, of course, includes the press, although they have to leave their cameras at home and resort to the notepad. So it will hopefully be an open hearing so that it can be adequately covered by the press.
Oh, that's right.
Last point that I want to drive home is the fact that the only reason that the federal government claims that they can be involved in this issue is the vandalism, or the alleged vandalism, to an SFPD police car. That's a city police car. They claim that the city gets money from the federal government, therefore the federal government is interested in this case. That is the most frightening part of this whole situation.
Sure, so the old states' rights people should have some real interest in this. Yeah, I guess so. I didn't realize it. So your appearance tomorrow is not part of the grand jury's. The grand jury is essentially asking the federal courts to deal with your position as a witness, and so this hearing tomorrow will be in open court dealing with the policy of the grand jury. Is that
correct? We've made a motion for it to be unsealed and open to the public, which we hope to be victorious in.
Yeah, okay. All right. Well, that's good. Yeah, so it that does sound very very much more positive than the secretive tribunal that we're all gives us the chills on the back of our neck. Hey, well, thanks for your time there, Josh, and why don't you give your website again?
Yeah, of course. Thank you so much for interviewing me, David. My website's www.joshwolf.net, And /grand jury will get you to the grand jury resource page with all of the court documents, press releases, and all the news articles that have been going on. And one very quick last thing, which I totally neglected to mention, is that the city of San Francisco has proposed a resolution on my behalf against the stepping in of the federal government. It was proposed by Ross Mercury Muzamas with Chris Daly as a co-sponsor. So if you live in the city of San Francisco next week, before Tuesdays, you can go call your supervisor and ask them to support this resolution. That would also be a great thing to do.
Yeah, and I think it is incumbent upon all of the other supervisors. Probably most of them can be convinced. Frankly, I think even Gavin Newsom, if he was made aware of certain aspects of this, would cause his side of the aisle, so to speak, to join in this. It would get very costly and time consuming for the federal government, which we do not trust under the Bush administration, to be nosing their way into every aspect of San Francisco politics. And it would be the ability for them to further waste our tax dollars. The Bush administration is robbing us blind, and then with our own money they would be then investigating us in how federal dollars are being spent in mismanagement. So that would there go the Social Security Trust Fund or any further pockets of money that the federal treasury has left.
Right. It's a horrible situation.
Well, it's just one more thing to make the American public aware of how their tax dollars are being abused. Hey, thanks again, Josh. Josh Wolf is one of the defendants well, he's not a defendant. He's essentially a witness in a grand jury that's been convened by the Bush administration in a federal grand jury. Well, you're listening to Indie Bay Radio here in San Francisco, and we'll go back to some normal broadcasting. And for the next few minutes, we're going to be doing, we'll be training some new DJs, so you'll be able to hear some of their favorite music.